So as a theme for this week's householder retreat, what I've been asking the retreatants to do is to practice cultivating mindfulness in their daily life, but particularly inclining the mind towards noticing happiness in their experience. And so that's what I'd like to talk about tonight. You might call this talk practicing happiness. With the central teaching of the Four Noble Truths, of the Buddhist path being the Four Noble Truths, the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of the cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. Sometimes it seems like there's not much room for happiness in this practice. But the third noble truth, the truth of the cessation of suffering, actually points to happiness. The cessation of suffering is sometimes called Mahasukha, or the great happiness. So the Four Noble Truths does actually incorporate happiness in it. But for many of us, that great happiness, or the complete ending of suffering, is a distant goal, perhaps, but not our actual experience, that we're still dealing with a lot of suffering in our lives. So in the Buddhist practice, we tend to focus a lot on these first two noble truths, the truth of suffering, understanding suffering, and the truth of the cause of suffering, the letting go of the causes of suffering, the clinging to suffering. So mindfulness practice can be very difficult, and it is very humbling. That basic instruction that we get for mindfulness practice, to pay attention to whatever is most obvious in our experience. In my experience, often what we notice when we bring our attention to the most obvious thing in our experience, it's the habitual tendencies of mind. It's the ways in which we suffer. Those habits could be pushing things away out of aversion, or trying to hold on to things to keep them from going when we like them. So looking directly at this kind of experience, the suffering that results from clinging and from pushing away, it's a very powerful form of practice. And I've experienced a lot of understanding and recognition and letting go around this style of practice. And it reflects a knowledge or an understanding that the aversion, that the greed, that all the difficulties that we encounter are actually visitors in our mind and don't actually reflect the true state of our mind. Once those things fall away, the natural state of the mind is one of happiness, of compassion, of joy, of equanimity, of kindness. And as we work in this way of looking at our difficulties, looking at our aversion, looking at our clinging, we begin to see moments of letting go, moments where we actually begin to recognize that when we let go, oh yes, there is a kind of peacefulness or quiet or tranquility or equanimity that's just present in the mind. So this practice does lead us in this direction towards seeing the happiness in small moments. But it's not the only form that our practice can take. In his teaching on right effort, which is one of the basic or most fundamental teachings about how to cultivate the mind in meditation and in mindfulness, in this teaching on right effort, the Buddha incorporates not only the letting go of unskillful mind states, but also incorporates the cultivation of wholesome or skillful mind states. So the unwholesome qualities of mind, in order to understand this teaching on right effort, it's helpful to understand what wholesome and unwholesome qualities of mind are. Unwholesome qualities of mind tend to be those that are born out of a state of greed, aversion, or delusion. These tend to be all of the states that lead us into suffering. They are aversion, resentment, frustration, hostility, avarice, lust for power or money, boredom, restlessness. All of those states of mind are born out of greed, aversion, or delusion. These are the states that lead us to suffering. Wholesome states of mind, or skillful states of mind, are those states that are born out of non-greed, non-aversion, and non-delusion. They tend to be states like generosity, compassion, equanimity, kindness. These are states that lead us away from suffering. But simply knowing what's wholesome and unwholesome, or skillful and unskillful, isn't usually enough for us to simply start cultivating the wholesome and abandoning the unwholesome. It's a process, it's a slow process that we learn bit by bit. What are the things that lead us into states of suffering, and what are the things that lead us into states of happiness? It's a trial and error kind of thing. We don't learn this except through experience. We try things and see what the consequences of our actions are, what the consequences of our choices are. And when we experience the consequences of our choices, that's where the learning takes place. So right effort, I'm going to do a little discussion of right effort here. It'll be fairly brief. There are four kinds of right effort, and the first two have to do with letting go or abandoning unskillful or unwholesome states. And these are the effort. The first one is the effort to towards the non-arising of unwholesome states that have not arisen. I'll explain that in a minute. And the second one is the effort towards the abandoning of unwholesome states that have arisen. So this first one, the effort towards the non-arising of unwholesome states that have not arisen, it really sounds kind of convoluted. But all it really is referring to is to recognize in your own experience what situations lead you into states of suffering and avoiding them, avoiding those states. So this is one of those trial and error kind of situations, one of those learning bit by bit. You try something and find out it lands you into suffering. If you're paying attention with mindfulness, there's a learning going on about what were the causes of that? What were the choices that were made? And what's the consequences of that? And so over time, we start to learn how to avoid those kind of situations. So the effort towards the non-arising is a kind of avoiding of situations that land us in suffering. The second is the effort to abandon unwholesome states that have arisen. And this is the one I think we're mostly familiar with in our practice. You know, we bring our mindfulness to these difficult states of mind, to anger, to frustration, to wanting. We bring our mindfulness to them and observe these states. So this letting go of this kind of state that has arisen in our experience, it can have an active quality to it. It can feel like we've seen this enough, and there's a sense in which the mind is wise enough to realize, wow, I don't need to do this anymore, and just let go of it. But often, in our mindfulness practice, we actually have to work with these states a little more. We need to spend time paying attention to the state of difficulty And through that observation, slowly, slowly over time, it begins to loosen and space forms around it. And over time, it begins to let go almost by itself. So this letting go that this second type of right effort refers to can be a kind of a very gentle letting go that happens through the course of mindfulness practice itself. The third and fourth kinds of right effort are talking about wholesome states of mind, cultivating wholesome states of mind. And this is really the crux of what I'd like to talk about tonight. So the third kind of right effort is the effort to arouse or to encourage wholesome states that have not yet arisen. So this entails, again, learning through experience what kinds of situations, what are the causes and conditions that lead towards happiness and non-suffering in our lives, and putting ourselves in that kind of situation. So this can be very simple, just knowing for yourself what are the things that bring you ease and peace in your life. It might be as simple as taking a walk in nature or relaxing at the end of a long day with a cup of tea looking out a window. Or it might be as simple as allowing yourself enough time to get to an appointment so that you're not rushed and feeling like you're stressed out because you're going to be late for your appointment. There's many, many simple things that we can do that will lead to our mind being more peaceful and more at ease. Getting enough sleep is another good one. We often don't get enough sleep. There's also a way in which we can actually actively cultivate wholesome states of mind, positive states of mind, through positive action, actually taking on practices that cultivate wholesome states of mind. The practice of metta, for instance, is the active cultivation of kindness in our hearts. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later on tonight. Or we can practice being giving. We can practice giving in order to cultivate generosity. So there are actual practices that we can do to cultivate wholesome states of mind. And this is the kind of thing that this third kind of effort is referring to. The fourth kind of right effort is the effort to sustain wholesome states that have arisen. And I've actually found it surprising for me, but true, that it actually does take some effort to appreciate these wholesome qualities when they've arisen. I tend to have the kind of mind that overlooks them or feels like they're less important somehow than the suffering. You know, we at least I've had this mindset for a while, you know, it's like, well, the suffering, that's really deep and meaningful, but, you know, happiness, what's that? So I've noticed a tendency in my own mind to kind of not really allow myself to appreciate when I'm calm or tranquil or when I'm happy. Especially calm and tranquil. In one retreat, it really was kind of startling to me. I had this one sitting finally where it's just this incredible state of calm. It's like, wow, this is great. The next thought in my mind was, this is the perfect time to pay attention to that pain in my back. So, you know, just throwing away the calm, not attending to the calm and thinking, pain, that's what I'm supposed to be paying attention to. That's where the meat of the practice is. In my experience, one of the most effective ways to sustain wholesome states when they've arisen is to actually be mindful of them. Pay attention to them. Notice what they feel like. Allow yourself to actually appreciate this wholesome, lovely quality of mind has arisen. It tends to feel very good in the body and in the mind. The mind can feel very light and malleable, and the body sometimes feels quite lovely, relaxed and at ease, sometimes with delightful sensations in the body. So they're very lovely states to pay attention to. So I'd want to just take a moment, so pointing out this teaching about right effort, where it talks about actually, you know, one of the central fundamental teachings of the Buddha is that we are supposed to engage in an effort to abandon unwholesome states and engage in an effort to cultivate wholesome states. And sometimes when people hear this, they get a little confused about the teaching on mindfulness, because the teaching on mindfulness is attend to whatever is present. Don't try to change anything, just observe it. And so sometimes there can be a confusion about this active movement to do something versus this simple cultivation of mindfulness. There can be a slight difference in focus, but I just want to point out that mindfulness itself, if we are simply mindful of our experience, we are engaged in the four right efforts kind of automatically. Because when we are mindful and paying attention to an unwholesome state of mind, it tends to lead towards the causes and conditions that allow us to abandon it. And when we bring our mindfulness to wholesome qualities of mind, it creates the causes and conditions that increases that likelihood of that to occur in the future. Now, this may seem a little confusing. I mean, sometimes we think when we pay attention to something, it makes sense that it would increase. So that makes sense to some extent to think about when we pay attention to the wholesome states of mind that they increase in our experience. But we also might think that paying attention to unwholesome states of mind would make them increase as well. That's kind of our mentality about paying attention to something. And I think it's one of the reasons we avoid paying attention to these difficult states of mind, because we have it in our mind that it will make it more, it will increase it. But mindfulness, that non-judgmental, just simple observation of a state of mind, allows it to take its normal course in our experience. And it also points out to us the consequences of that state of mind. So if we're paying attention to anger, for instance, we are letting that take its course, hopefully without feeding it with thoughts. If we're feeding it with thoughts, then we are probably increasing its tendency to occur. But if we're simply attending to the experience of anger in our body, and the kind of state or mood of anger in the mind, then the mind is recognizing what that experience is. And it is not a pleasant experience. That is a learning process. When the mind recognizes the consequences of anger to be a painful experience, that is how the learning happens. And the mind will start to let go of the anger because it doesn't want to be involved in that unpleasant experience. And this isn't something we're doing. It's not an aversion or pushing away an unpleasant experience. It's a very natural way that our minds operate. Our minds tend towards the pleasant, the wholesome kinds of experience. And when we are aware that when the mind becomes aware of its own contribution to its own suffering, it figures out the way out. So I just wanted to point out that there's not necessarily a contradiction between that pure practice of mindfulness and this teaching on right effort. If you're practicing pure mindfulness, you are practicing right effort. But one of the things I really want to highlight here is that the teaching on right effort really tells us that part of our practice is that we can cultivate happiness. We don't actually just have to sit and look at our suffering all the time. It's okay, as Buddhists, to cultivate happiness. Our conditioning, our habitual tendencies in our mind, the way we've been raised, the way that we, the mind tends to function, it tends to draw us into the same kind of states over and over again. So I'm sure most of you have some sense of the kind of habits of your own mind, some sense of whether you tend towards wanting to get rid of things all the time or wanting to hold on to things all the time. Some of us experience a lot of anxiety and frustration and aversion, and others of us experience a lot of wanting and desire. And often, because of these habits of mind, when the least little shred of something happens, you know, it's like we get locked into a pattern in our mind. It's felt like, you know, there's these ruts in my mind, and that a ball drops into that rut, and it just has to get right, you know, it doesn't have to get very close to the edge even. It's like this magnetic force pulling that ball into this rut. So we tend to, it's almost like we're expecting or looking for these kind of habits or patterns of mind. So we tend to overlook things that are not that kind of pattern or habit of mind. We have an expectation when we meet our experience that we're going to be experiencing anxiety and aversion, or we'll be experiencing a lot of wanting. And so we tend to kind of be on the lookout for that kind of state. So we can easily miss states of happiness. Or even kind of dismissing them when they do occur, as I mentioned before, you know, that I had this attitude that, oh yeah, happiness, well, you know, that's not who I really am. Really, who I am is a miserable person, you know. So I would dismiss the happiness. One time, and I also find sometimes I just don't even notice them. You know, like one time I was driving down a road and I noticed that my mind was spinning forward into the future and planning. And it was really unpleasant. It was just this projecting forward, I've got to do this and this and this and this. And I was driving and I kept saying, well, what's going on? Come back to the driving, just come back to being present, hands on the steering wheel. And then almost immediately the mind would be projecting forward again. And I'd come back. And after a few times of this happening, I kind of was curious. It's like, well, what's really going on here? What is happening here? Not just come back to, you know, hands on the steering wheel, but kind of like sitting back and opening, take a bigger look at my experience. And what I discovered was that I was happy. I was really happy. And what the mind was engaged in was trying to figure out how to keep myself happy in the future. And I had completely missed the fact that I was happy. And I actually found, with that experience, I found that I tend to kind of talk myself out of happiness. You know, I get engaged in this thinking process, and it's like, I lose the happiness. So see if you can recognize and appreciate these positive, wholesome feelings. States like gratitude, joy, generosity, kindness. We might consider these all to be flavors of happiness. They all have a kind of a happy quality to them. See if you can notice and pay attention to what they feel like in the body, in the mind. Sometimes it helps to think of the fullness of the experience. What is this, the fullness of this experience of this wholesome mind state? And this doesn't have to be a big deal. I mean, partly what I'm encouraging you to do here is to check throughout your day, even for tiny little moments of happiness. It doesn't have to be some major kind of happiness in order to do this exploration. Recognizing small moments that happen throughout the day, and they do actually happen throughout the day, helps us to recognize and feel them and to appreciate them, and that will cultivate the recognition of more of those states. It has this kind of positive feedback loop. So see, for instance, if you can notice a moment of happiness or delight when you bite into some food that you really enjoy. Or notice when you're happy, if you're happy when you see a friend. Or notice if you're happy when you've completed a task, you know, finished doing the dishes or finished vacuuming or anything that you've accomplished. Just see what is the state in your experience. Let your mind be open to the fact that these things happen throughout the day, that they come, and they're actually kind of fleeting often, these states. They happen throughout the day. I was talking to someone earlier who's in the householder retreat, and this person mentioned that they had noticed a very subtle kind of happiness one evening, in the evening as they were turning out the lights and seeing the room in a kind of nicely ordered thing. Very, very subtle kind of just pleasant experience. This kind of thing happens to us a lot, but we don't tend to notice it. We'll start to recognize as we do this practice that these states are more frequent than we thought they were. One of my favorite ways to practice with this is when I take my morning walk. I tend to take my walk around the same time each day. So I run into the same people. And I noticed at first, you know, people wouldn't say much or anything. You know, it's kind of a, you know, look down, look away. And over time, seeing the same people over and over again, there began to be a kind of a connection and a smiling. And one woman, I tended to pass her across the street, and she was waiting at a bus stop. And sometimes I'd walk right by her, and sometimes I'd walk down the street on the other side. And at first, you know, she'd kind of look like she was, you know, a little bit frightened to make eye contact or something. But over the course of months, we began recognizing each other and smiling. And then at one point, over time, when I'd walk down the other side of the street, she'd be yelling, "Hi!" across the street. And, you know, just it was such a joyful experience, actually, to have that, just that moment of contact with somebody smiling and happy. And I began actually noticing when I came across some people. There's one older man who had the most lovely smile. He just makes me joyous just to think about his smile. And he kind of walked kind of slowly, but he would just light up. His whole face would light up in a smile when we met. And I tracked how long that happiness lasted for myself. And it was quite a while. I mean, I didn't try to hold on to it. I just kind of observed it. But it lasted like, you know, 45 seconds to a minute for a smile. I mean, what a gift to be able to appreciate and feel that happiness just from a smile. So I highly recommend the smiling practice. Another kind of flavor of happiness, more subtle, is to recognize when you're not suffering. So this is definitely more subtle. Another way to look at this is as moments of non-clinging. And one of my teachers, Joseph Goldstein, likes to say that these moments of non-clinging, they're moments of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, they happen many, many, many times throughout the day. It's happening a lot to us, these moments of non-clinging. It's just that we do not see them. They're so subtle. Our minds are habituated and tuned to experiencing much more obvious phenomena. So we miss them. We miss these moments of non-clinging. So just as a kind of a little thought experiment, imagine that you've been in an accident and broken your leg. Think about how it would be. You've got a big cast, you know, hip to foot. Big cast on your leg. And think about how difficult it would be to get out of bed in the morning, get your crutches and hobble to the bathroom and give yourself a sponge bath and, you know, balancing on your crutches at that same time. And then if you've got stairs in the house, working your way downstairs on the crutches, hanging onto the banister, hopping down the stairs. How difficult life would be with this broken leg. And preparing a meal, finding a way to get to work. You can't drive with a broken leg, but finding somebody to bring you to work. All these things become quite difficult with a broken leg. And now imagine that in a moment, the cast is gone and your leg is healed. How much happiness there would be for those simple things of being able to get out of bed, able to walk to the bathroom, walk down the stairs. That is the kind of wonder of not suffering. We tend to notice in our experience, we tend to notice the momentum of anxiety or worry and think something is wrong, feel like we have to fix things or do something about it. Or we notice moments when we're exuberant or excited and feel like that's the way things are supposed to be. That's right. That's what we're supposed to be experiencing, is this excitement and this exuberance. And this is the way life is supposed to be. We have a habit of believing we're supposed to look for these highs and fix the lows. And we don't often rest in the space of no problem, when there's just no problem. We tend to space out or get bored in that space. But this space of no problem is actually a pointer to a very deep state of peace, and even a deeper kind of happiness. But it's kind of, one of my teachers, Michelle McDonald, says that it's something that we need to acquire a taste for. Because we are kind of addicted to the highs and lows. So beginning to explore this space of no problem, what does it actually feel like when things are just okay? Places to play with this. One of my favorite places to play with this is if I have allowed myself enough time to get to an appointment, this part is crucial, when I'm waiting at a stoplight or waiting at a red light, you know, if I've got enough time, there's no problem. You know, just what's happening right now? There's nothing to do except wait for that light to turn green. What's going on? And it's actually quite a nice space to check in. If your mind isn't projecting forward to the future or thinking about the past, right here in this moment, there's not much wrong. You know, you're sitting here waiting to go forward. So that's one of my favorite places to play with this. What does it feel like when nothing's wrong? Does the body feel relaxed? Is the mind calm, at peace? These things have a pleasant quality to them when they are noticed. Peace is actually a pretty subtle phenomenon. But see if you can begin to acquire a sense of the taste or the happiness of peace. Another place to play with this is in kind of the many little tiny transitions that happen throughout the day. We're always finishing one thing and then starting another. And typically we leap ahead in our mind to the next thing. So as soon as we've finished our meal, we're leaping ahead to got to clean up the dishes. Or as soon as we finish the dishes, we're leaping ahead to I've got to finish my checkbook stuff. You know, so we're kind of continually leaping ahead of ourselves. But see if you can rest in the transitions, the little transitions throughout the day. See if you can just stop for a moment. It's like, when you finished a meal, how is it? Body is satisfied. There's not much happening. What does that feel like when not much is happening? It can be a challenge because we often get into boredom around this. It's these neutral states of mind. We just, it's really hard to connect with them sometimes. But see if you can notice a kind of potentially a feeling of relaxation or calmness in the mind, that there's not actually that much going on. And see if you can touch into what those experiences are. So we can cultivate happiness by noticing what gets in its way, actually, by looking at the suffering and seeing that that is in the way of happiness. And as that frees up, then more happiness is available. We can cultivate happiness by bringing awareness to those happy, wholesome states of mind. And we can also cultivate happiness by actively cultivating it in the metta practice, as I mentioned before. This is it's a lovely practice, actually, but it took me quite a long time to connect with it. It's a practice where we actively think thoughts of kindness towards ourselves and others. So it's not like the mindfulness practice. It's not a silent practice. We're actually using phrases of kindness in our mind as a way to incline our mind towards kindness. So it's simply connecting with yourself or another person and saying these phrases: may I be happy, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you be safe, may you live with ease. And noticing the impact that that has on your body and mind when you say those phrases. So that piece of it I find to be the crucial piece, that noticing the impact of saying the phrases on your experience. Until I got that instruction and started practicing in that way, I really had difficulty connecting to the metta practice. It was very painful for me initially, actually. Every time I tried to say the phrases, I would just end up in so much contraction and suffering. It's like, I can't feel this. I don't feel this feeling. But when I started to just say the phrase and notice what it felt like in the mind and body, kind of like check in at the heart and just notice, how does the heart feel when it wishes myself well or wishes someone well? And I began to see that in very quiet, subtle ways, there was just a little bit of softening or a little bit of opening. Not a lot, but just a tiny little bit. And feeling that feeling was like the beginning of little tiny embers of that kindness. And the continuation of saying the phrases is like blowing on the embers of that kindness. So it can actually generate that kindness in us. And it is not it sounds like it might be an artificial practice, but it's not artificial in that you are actually experiencing the impact of it. It's not trying to construct it and say to myself, well, I'm going to be kind now, or I'm going to feel loving now. It's actually connecting with what experience you are having and just continuing with saying those phrases. I spent a month doing this practice at one point. It's all I did for a whole month. And it was quite amazing how connected it was, the saying of the phrases and the happiness that followed. Another topic that I'd like to discuss, I'll just really have to mention it very briefly because I just noticed that it's almost 9 o'clock, is that the practice itself is also a doorway to this happiness. Sometimes when we're paying attention to our difficult states of mind, the storms in our mind, you know, that's what's happening. We have very little control at times to actually find happiness in our experience when there's a difficult state going on. But the engagement in the practice itself, the bringing our mindfulness to the experience, sometimes we can connect with that engagement, that sense of process and working with the difficult state. And there can be a sense of satisfaction or even joy that there is a process happening that we trust, that we know will help us. So that can be a form of happiness, just that engagement in our practice. Another thing we can start to see is that we can start to see the letting go happen. When we bring our attention to these storms, we begin to notice that kind of more space is created around them. And sometimes we see them disappear entirely. And in that disappearance of a difficult state of mind, it's like the mind has been freed from a vice grip. And there's a state of happiness in that letting go. The letting go itself brings a kind of happiness. So as we practice bringing awareness to these states of happiness, generosity, joy, tranquility, kindness, these wholesome states of mind, we begin to get more familiar with them. And in that familiarity, we begin to actually recognize them more often. So we learn what it feels like. We learn to recognize it. And then it kind of wakes us up almost when we start to feel these things. One thing Thich Nhat Hanh said that I love as a reminder, and I'll close with this, quote, "Happiness is available. Please help yourselves." So I've talked for the whole time, so I'm afraid there's not any time for questions. I apologize. I usually like to leave a little time for some questions, but may you all find happiness and joy in your lives.